listening to the 18th episode of the Armaan and Akhil Show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Akhil Krishnan.
And I'm Armaan Rana. We're recording this on Saturday, the 3rd of August, 2024, at 7.08 p.m. We're recording on UBC's Vancouver campus, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hankamedum-speaking Musqueam people. You'll probably be listening to this episode on August 10th at around 5 p.m.
So, Armaan, how are you? How are things?
Not bad. Feeling a bit sleepy. I don't know, summer sleepiness taking over me, but
otherwise,
life's good. How about you? Anything interesting happening in your life?
Yeah, a couple things, but yeah, I'm also feeling very sleepy. But I attribute that to the delightful pile of thighs that we had for lunch.
Yeah. This is not paid advertisement for chicken consumption. Let's move on. What's happening? What do we have in store today?
So this is another special episode where we play some clips from around the world, and we give you some context for them, and then we discuss them. We're going to start at home today, close to home. And do you want to talk a little bit about? Have you heard about this? About the blockage on the Chilcotin River?
No, I heard vaguely about it, but I didn't know. I got an alert on my phone, and I was like, what's going on? But yeah, I don't know what's happening.
All right, so just to provide some context for our viewers, the Chilcotin River is one of the tributaries of the Fraser River. So obviously, a major river in northern BC. Right now, there was a landslide that basically dammed the river, creating an 11-kilometer temporary lake. Now, all of that water is slowly eroding away at the temporary dam, and there are fears that when the dam is breached, there will be catastrophic downstream effects. Let's take a listen.
With many of the trees still upright, it's hard to tell this is a landslide swallowing the Chilcotin River Valley. Breathtaking, but dangerous.
We cannot emphasize enough how important it is for people living in the area and downstream of the slide to remain vigilant and stay away from the river for their own safety.
The massive slide, more than half a kilometer wide and 30 meters deep, leaving the riverbed exposed and dry.
You can hear it from standing up here. It's usually roaring. You can hear the sound of the river, but right now, up here from where we're at, it's quiet.
Water destined for the Fraser backing up to form an 11-kilometer-long temporary lake. Officials preparing for multiple scenarios, but say updated modeling shows water flowing over top of the slide is more likely than a sudden catastrophic failure.
We do anticipate that it will take between 12 to 24 hours for that water and that debris to reach Hope. So we're talking about a number of hours that are available to us to notify the public.
It will start to erode and cut through that dam, probably releasing a pretty substantial pulse of water.
On Thursday, members of local First Nations gathered near the slide for a ceremony.
Anything that affects that river in any way, or the water, the fish, that it basically our identity, and it's in our genes, and that's who we are.
Communities up and downstream praying for the best, but preparing for the worst.
We are deploying flood assets to communities like Lillooet and other communities that are reaching out for flood assets in order to protect critical infrastructure and critical sites.
What's certain is the Chilcotin will flow again. The only question is when. Travis Prasad, Global News.
So that is presenting some challenges for the governments as they prepare for the eventual breach of the dam.
That was Emergency Ministers Bowen Ma speaking.
And there was also Minister Nathan Cullen who spoke earlier as well.
Have you been up in that area before, or?
Not all the way up to where this is. So this is, I think, a few hundred kilometers away from Williams Lake. That's quite far north, actually. But I haven't been up there. But I have been to the areas downstream on Chilcotin, and it's a massive river.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine just how much water is being held up right now, and what the effect is going to look like, even down in, you know, like they were saying, like a Hope, right, or and even downstream from there. I wonder what effects we'll see in, you know, if we were to go down to the Fraser River for when that water, that mass of water just reach us here.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't
Turn out
too dramatically.
Yeah, and hopefully people have time and that they're heeding the evacuation warnings. So we're going to move on to something that I think is on to the top of everybody's mind right now, the Olympics. Have you been following the Olympics at all?
So I watched a bit of the opening ceremony. And beyond that, I've just got these like very strange sneak peeks into random things that are going on in the Olympics, but not enough to get.
Tell us one of these. Tell us a random thing that's been going on in the Olympics that you've seen.
Yeah, I don't know. There was
maybe something funny, something that's.
There's some parts of the opening ceremony I didn't see, and there's a lot of people just like freaking out about what they perceive to be a reenactment of the Last Supper.
Hmm.
So that was something that came up.
Ah, yes.
I don't know if it was supposed to be something about Dionysus and Greek culture. I don't know, but apparently it was interpreted as being about the Last Supper. So some.
It offended delicate evangelical sensibilities.
Yeah. It was interesting. I don't know what I thought about that. What about you? What's your level of engagement with the Olympics?
I actually haven't watched any of the events live, I have to admit. I have watched them after the fact, and I've been watching clips. Obviously, watching Simone Biles jump and do incredible twists and turns up in the air is always a remarkable sight to behold. And you know, besides that, I've been following the goings on with our women's national team. I'm sure you heard about that, and I'm sure you read about it.
Yeah, the drone situation. Yes. It's strange to connect Olympics with drones. It's like two different universes. Yeah. Like drones are about like we associate with like warfare and
exactly. When you say drone, I immediately think of a predator drone.
Yeah. Especially in the context of our show, we would often maybe talk about drones in the context of the Ukraine war or the war in Gaza. What's the drone deal? So basically, this coach decided to spy on the New Zealand soccer team.
Right. So I as I understand it, there was a video assistant, like a video coach, somebody who like who either. Somebody who records video and also may work with the team to kind of understand what's going on. They were basically caught using drones to spy on the New Zealand football team's practice. And naturally, they complained to the Olympic committee, and the Olympic committee decided to dock the Canadian our national team by 6 points.
Yeah, I think they were caught by the French authorities in the end, and the whole thing was very strange. Like, multiple people viewed that footage. I believe it was not just, you know, some contractor. It was.
Yeah, and there were questions about the head coach's complicity, right? Saying that it's unlikely something like this could happen without her knowledge, and this whole thing doesn't really make a lot of sense because. The Canadian team, they're very good. They're very good.
But now everyone's going to be asking, is this why they're very good?
Exactly. They're gold medalists, right? They're coming in this tournament to defend their gold medal. And it really, really begs the question, like, why would someone feel the need to do something like this? And there's the added kind of layer to this where someone went on the Canadian Football Federation's website and they found a still up there job posting for drone operator. And look, professional teams across the board use drone footage to analyze how their team's practices are going. But especially now, that's such a bad look going like, yeah, we're hiring a dedicated drone operator for our practices. Yeah, that posting was still up. So that,
It's just really sad. And they were going up against New Zealand, which from what I understand, I'm not a big, you know, consumer of the sport, but they're not the most notable team.
No. They're supposed to, New Zealand's good at, football's not one of them.
So yeah, it's just, the whole thing is very bizarre and very un-Canadian, if you might say so.
Canada's done a great PR job in the past few decades to really rehash the country's image, right? Being for politeness, for upstanding civil values.
Yeah, it's just really sad. And there's more bizarreness coming out of this Olympics. Do you want to talk about what's happening in the boxing that everybody's losing their mind online about?
Yeah, so there was a preliminary boxing. So I think the first round boxing match between her first name is between Iman Khalif and I want to get this right.
It's Karini,
but Angela Karini. Yeah, so it's Angela Karini against Iman Khalif, and this boxing match.
And this is Algeria versus Italy.
So this boxing match lasted all of 30 seconds, 30, 40 seconds, or more than that. It was abandoned by Karini. And in the aftermath, obviously she was visibly upset in the aftermath. She refused to shake Iman Khalif's hand. She didn't really acknowledge her corner afterwards. All things that you do, for our listeners who have never watched a boxing match before, either live or on TV, these are all things that you do just as a show of respect, sportsmanship, sportspersonship, whatever you want to call it. And it's kind of part of this whole part. It's part of the sport, right? None of that. And basically in the post-match press conference, she said that I fought a man today. That was a man. I've never been punched like that in my life. And you could see that when she got the first few punches and you play the clip back, that she really was like, she wasn't really eating those punches really well. And she was clearly shaken by them. And then when she said that, that set off a firestorm, and that brought to light something that happened last year where the IBF, I believe, disqualified Iman Khalif.
IBF stands for?
The International Boxing Federation. So they disqualified Iman Khalif and a South Korean boxer for failing the gender determination test, which is basically a testosterone test that says, oh, if you're above this testosterone level, then you can't compete in the women's category.
It was a Taiwanese boxer, right?
Sorry, it was a Taiwanese boxer. Yeah. That's right. Pardon my ignorance.
Lin Yuting.
Yes, pardon my ignorance of Southeast Asian countries.
Yeah.
So it basically said it brought that to light and set off a firestorm online. But basically, this boxer has received a lot of vitriol in the aftermath of this match. So let's just go ahead and take a listen to what the IOC chief had to say about this.
There I can only invite them to come up with a scientific based a new definition of who is a woman. And how can somebody being born, raised, competed, and having a passport as a woman cannot be considered a woman? If they are coming up with something, we are ready to listen. We are ready to look into it. But we will not take part in a politically motivated, sometimes politically motivated, cultural war. And allow me to say that what is going on in this context, in the social media, with all this hate speech, with this aggression and abuse, and fueled by this agenda is totally unacceptable.
To put an end to this ongoing gender dispute, thank you.
So obviously, I mean, really uncomplicated situation, right? It really is uncomplicated. She is a woman. Women have testosterone. She has higher than statistically average women might have.
Yeah, it's
that's about the sum of it, right?
What's the most absurd part about it? One of the many things that are so absurd about it is she's from Algeria. Whatever you may think of Algeria, you know, it's not some sort of quote unquote woke paradise. Yeah. You know, they're not. I don't know. Of you know, post gender society, this is not the situation in Algeria. So, yeah, what's especially cruel about it is, you know, she's a human being, right?
Yeah,
she's got feelings too.
Exactly.
And I don't. She was born a certain way, with certain advantages potentially, or. And maybe other disadvantages, and she didn't, you know, choose this life. She was born this way, and yeah. Just because it makes you uncomfortable, because it doesn't, you know, I don't know, fit neatly into your, you know, concepts of what, you know, I don't know how men and women should appear or something like that. That's not a really justification to be so, yeah, just so to be so sadistic and cruel to someone who's just living their life, doing something they're really good at, clearly, and not like unbelievably good at either. Like you were just telling me before the show, she's actually lost a significant number of games as well.
I believe her record is something like she's a 77% win rate, which yes, it's not. There are boxers who have like perfect. Records, right? Professional boxers and amateur boxers, but I'm sure there are amateur boxers too with a perfect record. But that shows that there are clearly boxers out there who are good enough to beat her.
Yeah.
Right? And this whole thing started because there was a boxer who, and you know, Angela Carini admitted, now she's apologized, and she said, in that moment I was angry because I saw my Olympic hopes go up in smoke. And I shouldn't have reacted the way I did. But this, I thought the whole point of the Olympics was to test people who are naturally the best, like, you know, without doping, without any kind of like, you know, enhancements in the form of like biohacking or anything like that. It's just athletes who are the best at what they do. Shouldn't that be what we
want? Yeah, it's.
And this goes back to something with Caster Semenya, right? The South African middle distance runner, who was basically determined to have unnaturally high testosterone levels to compete in the women's category, and they basically made it mandatory for her to go through hormone therapy in order to be able to compete. And she's filed a number of legal challenges, obviously.
And she's account. A hero in South Africa. She's a big hero there. And, you know, across the spectrum, everybody supports her back home. But it's just very strange. And you have people like J.K. Rowling, who's this anti-trans, has, you know, reinterpreted herself from being a beloved
children's book author.
Book author to an anti-trans icon to now taking on someone who's, you know, potentially has slightly higher testosterone levels.
And I mean, J.K. Rowling said before, she said, you know, that my whole activism was because of, you know, it's a victim of sexual assault, which of course, like, no, don't want to take away anything from her victimhood. But she said it's because I don't want people with male genitalia to be. I was like, yeah, but this is a person who was born a woman, identifies as a woman, has competed as a woman, in the passport it says they're a woman, they have a uterus. They are, like, what, as Chief asked, what definition are these people using?
And it's also, personally, like, I understand and I've, you know, appreciate that there's a lot of technique and strategy to boxing. At the end of the day, it's a very violent sport.
Yes.
you're giving each other concussions for a living. Yeah. It can be distasteful, right, to look at, just generally. I don't know what is it about a particular, you know, punch that's more... I personally find generally the whole violence a bit distasteful, but, you know, I don't know. This hang up of somebody with slightly higher testosterone or something, oh, it's beyond the pale. I cannot look at this. It's just... I think sometimes the reaction doesn't seem, it seems kind of fake, to be honest.
Right. And which is what I was asking, was like, how is this, I think I asked you this before the show, how is this any different than any other physical advantage that an athlete has, right? Like Michael Phelps being really, really tall, obviously
helps
him.
And he has some special like lactic acid, something.
Exactly. That helped him be a faster swimmer, set a world record for a number of gold medals, won at the Olympics. How is that
and
any different?
Messi has really interesting things going on with his legs, right?
Yeah.
I don't know the details, but he's got some... He's not in the normal spectrum in terms of certain aspects of his legs.
Which, to help him be the best player in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's very curious what people... And, you know, kind of an outside perspective, there's people who are saying that these athletes should take hormone therapy. I'm like, what is this? Are we going back to the days where, like, you know, we used to chemically castrate people for their sexuality or their perceived gender or whatever the hell our notion is of what a human being should be, right?
Yeah.
And it's uncomplicated. This is a human being. Human beings do not conform to any one type of thing or person or form or whatever. And this person decided to compete in this. They're really good at it. Which is probably why they do it.
Yeah.
And why are we chastising them for it? You know, I don't imagine anyone ever saying, you're too good at math. Why are you getting a math PhD? Right?
Yeah, yeah. Imagine if they apply that to any other aspect of life. It's like, you're too suspicious. You need to get, like, we need to put you on performance de-enhancing drugs.
Exactly.
Because you're too good at your job.
Can you imagine if they said, we think you would be too presidential. So let's get some idiot who's not going to be that good at this do this.
That seems to be happening right now. that's a good time to transition. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back in a couple of minutes. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Armand and Akil show, breaking down the latest headlines. See you in a bit.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Armand and Akil show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're breaking down the latest headlines. Akil, let's check in what's happening with our mayor, Ken Sim. He's been away for the summer, but he's definitely been keeping fit at least. What's happening with him?
I think he has, and he no doubt has been keeping fit with a lot of swag, because that's something that he said the mayor's office needs more of. All right, so let's take a listen to what's going on with Mayor Ken Sim.
Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim's gym. It's now part of his office, ready anytime he is.
My days start at 7 o'clock in the morning. They end at about 10 o'clock at night, so whenever I can get a quick hit in. But it's not just me. Everyone has access, the other counselors, people in the mayor's office.
Sim's now answering questions over this space after Green Party councillor Pete Fry posted a photo of it online. He says the mayor's office wasn't transparent about the room's conversion, saying it was used for public meetings and is now not accessible to all.
It did hit a nerve for a lot of folks, and I think it speaks more to being disconnected from the everyday realities of most people and the fact that you couldn't get away with this in any other workplace where you kind of take a public meeting room and then repurpose it for your own thing.
Other councillors say it's yet more proof Sim isn't being transparent over his office's activities.
To see it almost empty with some exercise equipment is infuriating. We have a gym at City Hall. I know because I use it regularly when I am frustrated from council and need to burn off a little steam.
Jim Gate comes a day after other controversy involving the mayor. Council approved moving a staff member from the city clerk's office to Sim's office. Opposition councillors say it's now a political resource. Sim maintains it's simply clerical, needed to balance his busy schedule.
The scheduling of my activities are off the chart, insanely crazy and complicated, and literally change every 15 minutes.
While opponents are spinning their wheels about the mayor's transparency and personal gym, Sim is keeping his chin up.
Look, people play politics. We're concerned about doing what's right for the city.
Sim's priority is to build what he calls a world-class city by attracting business, investors, and visitors that, he says, requires high energy. So having a gym at the ready is required. Chad Pawson, CBC News, Vancouver.
We should have drops. That's a drop. What did he say? Insanely?
Insanely off the charts.
Crazy,
complicated, and literally changes every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's not necessarily a great sign. Does it instill confidence?
No, it doesn't. But also, as we spoke about this before the show, I've not heard prime ministers, I haven't heard presidents talk about their schedule that way.
I haven't heard, to his credit, Donald Trump has said a lot of buffoonish things. He probably takes the cake for the buffoonish things he says and how much he brags about how hard he's working. I've never heard him say anything like this.
If I had to picture any one politician saying that, it would be him.
Yeah. Ken Sim is just putting Donald Trump to shame with how hard he's working.
Exactly. There's actually another clip that we have on this topic because the mayor just is an absolute wellspring of great quotes.
Before we get to it, I just want to say the other thing, he also referred to going to the gym as getting a quick hit in.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it just...
it's high intensity interval training?
Is that what he's referring to?
Let's take a listen to this next clip. I quite enjoyed it.
Vancouver's mayor giving a show and tell of a gym beside his city hall office. The reason... allegations this room has been kept secret.
I was shocked, not because it's a gym, I mean, it's more because it's personal use of public space.
Green Party councillor Pete Fry says he only discovered the gym's existence on Friday.
City Hall was empty. The doors were opened up and lo and behold, the former boardroom was now clearly converted into some kind of personal gym for the mayor.
Fry also sharing a memo from the city manager in January saying the room would be used for regular operations of the mayor and his office team.
The mayor's office originally only offered a statement on the issue, but after multiple requests from media asking questions, the mayor then gave a tour.
Oh my God. This
gym space does share a wall with the mayor's office. Sim says for privacy reasons, it could no longer be a meeting room.
We actually hold very serious meetings here that are super confidential. This place isn't soundproof, so you can basically hear through these walls.
There's a Peloton, weights, bands, and a hanging bar. All equipment, Sim says, he paid for himself, despite there already being a fitness facility at City Hall and multiple gyms in the area.
If you're going to use it for private use, I think that's more of a conversation that needs to happen than just we're taking over for our office. See you later.
It seems like this was done in secret.
No, not at all. Look, the reality is we've invited everyone to use this. People play politics.
Fry says he wanted to ask questions about the gym at Tuesday's council meeting when discussing an increase in the mayor's office budget, but never got the chance. Alyssa Tebow, Global News.
What a...
I'm surprised he let anyone in, like all those people come into that room, given that they have super serious meetings, super confidential meetings.
Yeah, super confidential. Ultra. Yeah,
very serious. Like, generally, people who have serious meetings refer to those meetings as very serious, super confidential. Yeah.
And, you know, confidential meetings and these walls aren't soundproof, so you can literally hear everything in the other room.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. The swag is off the charts.
About this one.
Yeah, I can't take the swag. Like when he was shotgunning beer, I was already overwhelmed with the swag, and now I'm just like.
Now you're just completely gaga over the moon.
Yeah. I'm just like out of commission now. I'm just swagged out. I have too much swag. It's like, I can't take it anymore. It
almost hurts to look at it because it's so much. It's like looking at the sun.
It's like when an intern comes back from like interning in Silicon Valley, they come back like decked out in all the swag of the company. Yeah. It's like too much swag.
Exactly.
You just can't see them anymore. Like you just wonder like what were they doing their whole time, because it would have taken 3 months to collect that much merchandise.
Yeah.
And that's what you feel when you're looking at this mayor. It's just like there's so much swag going on. What's actually happening to the actual job of mayor?
Yeah, well, I mean, too much, obviously. Super confidential meetings, off the charts, crazy, complicated scheduling. That changed every 15 minutes.
You have to change it every 15 minutes because you don't want anyone to know.
Exactly. You work from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You got to get the hit in every now and again. So every 15 minutes, you got to change when you're going to do that hit, right?
Yeah, you don't want the opposition parties to know that because they're going to play politics.
Exactly.
So you got to get your hits in. Yeah,
exactly.
You got to get your super confidential. Like he's basically joining. He's joining. What he doesn't want to tell anyone. He's about to join Tom Cruise on the Mission Impossible team.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's why he's working out.
Yeah.
That's why his meeting schedule changes every 15 minutes. That's why it's all super confidential.
He wants to keep everyone guessing.
That's why he needs soundproof rooms. It explains everything.
Speaking of playing politics and being super confidential, political, crazy, we're gonna go south across the border.
Not the Integrity Commission or.
Ah yes, we were talking about the integrity of our mayor's office and city council. So. Why don't you set this up for us?
Yeah. So I think the clip sets up pretty well. But basically, there were some recommendations from the integrity commissioner and city council. And the city councilors decided to interpret those recommendations that they need to suspend all operations of the city council, of the commissioner, integrity commissioner for city councilor, all ongoing investigations, and get a third party kind of consulting firm to review the scope, which is kind of interesting, scope of the mandate of the powers of the commissioner, what sort of things they should be investigating. And they're suspending all active investigations. So let's take a listen how people are feeling about this.
I think it's just a big pattern of behavior of this ABC council that, you know, if they're facing any kind of opposition or issues, that they just silence people.
If you're concerned.
That we're listening to, the integrity commissioner of the Parks Board.
Concerned about misconduct by a Vancouver city councillor or the mayor of Vancouver, you can submit a complaint to the city's integrity commissioner. But now you're going to have to wait before seeing any action. And that's because council voted on Wednesday at the last council meeting before summer break to hit pause on all of the integrity commissioner's investigations. And now any complaints received will be picked up after a third party review of the scope of the commissioner's office.
So the integrity commissioner investigates code of conduct violations for elected officials. And without that, really the code of conduct is kind of meaningless because there's nobody to investigate or show that the code of conduct has been broken.
Councillor Brian Montague put forward the motion to investigate the scope of the integrity commissioner.
I've heard the concerns. I don't share those concerns. I think that any pause will be a brief one. We'll get a report back from the independent third party and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Can you say if you are the subject of any investigations in that office at this present moment?
I have no investigations against me at this point.
Independent Park Board Commissioner Laura Christensen says she's concerned a pause will take months or years. In March, she received a public apology from Mayor Ken Sim after the Integrity Commissioner found Sim broke code of conduct rules when he left her out of a critical meeting on the Park Board's future.
Right now, we don't know how many open investigations there are, how serious those investigations are, and those will stay in the dark until this review is complete.
In her 2023 annual report, Integrity Commissioner Lisa Southern said the role of her office isn't always clear, and she made four recommendations to improve it.
One of the basic principles of an office like this is that they understand their role, they understand their scope, their jurisdiction and their mandate. If they're unsure of that, it needs to be settled.
But Councillor Pete Fry says Montague is taking the recommendations out of context.
What we saw here was cherry picking the first clause. Well, there's some problems with scope, pulling it out of context and using it as a justification to rather unilaterally remove the Integrity Commissioner. And what's most salient here is suspend active investigations.
City staff will come back in the fall with options for a third-party review. In Vancouver, Keir Junos, City News.
So yeah, what do you think about that?
I mean, it goes to a long list of concerns that people have had about this council, right? About this particular city council, ABC councillors in particular, and their conduct. And you know, an example of leaving the commissioner of the parks board out of a meeting when deciding what you were going to try to do.
Maybe it was super confidential, man.
It apparently was super confidential. It was so confidential they had to leave out the commissioner of that entity.
Yeah. Sometimes when Tom Cruise asks you to do something,
you drop everything and you do it.
You do it, man. That's how it is. It's what's interesting to me as well is they're suspending active investigations. There's going to be a new scope defined by the independent, quote unquote, third party. What the natural logical conclusion is, there's an active investigation that they don't like, that they're hoping that the independent third party finds out of scope and so is dropped. That's not necessarily true, but they're acting in such a suspicious manner that it leads one to believe that or suspect that. Otherwise, you would just allow the ongoing investigations to continue. This office has existed for at least, I think, around three years. It existed during the previous council. I don't think there were any, you know, huge issues in the previous council. And the previous council was more complex because a lot more parties, a lot more moving parts. It was actually a lot harder to get things done. Where here, the ABC have a huge majority. So they're acting in a super confidential manner.
Yeah.
And
not suspicious at all.
And I'm not sure that's the best way we should be running our city, but I guess we'll...
But I'm sorry, do you have a schedule that changes every 15 minutes that's over the top, crazy, complicated?
It's super confidential. I can't discuss
that. Sorry, you can't have an opinion on this anymore.
I can't discuss our schedule.
That's just how it works.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Yeah, and also if Councillor Montague is to be believed when he says there's no active investigation against him, then it goes to the other really, really strong voice on council that wanted this to happen. And we don't know, but the question has to be, like, what are the open investigations against the mayor's office?
Or against Zhao, who was also...
Exactly.
Who added the amendment specifically to suspend it. Who knows?
Yeah. So now we will move down south across the border. We're going to pick up a couple of things.
Speaking of integrity. Let's talk of the man who was known for comparing Donald Trump to Hitler about 10 years ago.
Hitler from Germany.
America's Hitler. He said he was going to be America's Hitler.
Yes.
And then I said he was a never-Trumper. And then realized America's Hitler doesn't sound so bad after all. He's not had a great time lately, and there've been kind of a variety of attacks that he's had to face. Poor fellow. Let's start with his wife. With his wife. So the context is, you know, his wife is Indian. He's
Usha,
which is interesting given that Donald Trump's latest attack against Kamala Harris is that she's Indian and not black.
No, she she's Indian, and then later she just became black.
She turned black.
She turned black.
But she's not, she's kind of a phony black.
Exactly.
That's the main point, right? So it's interesting that that's the, anyway, it's here. You know, Vance is under attack because those same kind of white supremacists to whom those kind of attacks work are also attacking his wife for being Indian. So let's take a listen to how he defends his wife.
I love my wife so much. I love her because she's who she is. Obviously, she's not a white person, and we've been attacked by some white supremacists over that. But I love Usha. She's such a good mom.
See, this is...
But he loves her. And, you know, he did acknowledge they were attacked by white supremacists. Obviously, she's not a white person. Did you know that?
But she loves her.
But he loves her. And because she's a good mom. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Those are two.
Yeah, it's
a good mom.
It's great. It's great. Yeah. Great. I'm sure this is like... This is like peak romance that you'll see
exactly
in the next, like, I don't know, next Marvel film or next big budget Hollywood, the next Titanic, you know, Titanic 2. There'll be a final scene, and he's like, "She's not a white woman, but I love her." it's the most famous. It's Shakespearean almost.
It has all the markings of a timeless romance.
Yeah, it's very reassuring in this day and age. That you have to follow the sentence, "She's not white, but."
But she's a good mom, and I love it.
But anyway, what else? What else has? Do you want to give the childless? What's this childless cat lady deal? Do you want to set that one up?
Yeah. So J.D. Vance, when he was running for Senate a few years ago, decided. He was on Tucker Carlson, and he basically tweeted something about. So I guess to give you a full context, J.D. Vance is a staunch pronatalist. That is, he is in favor of increasing births, right? He's in favor of births. And it's a very fancy way of saying he's obsessed with the birth rate, maybe even to an uncomfortable extent. And so he has, like, very pronatalist views, and that extends to, like, his kind of stance on abortion, where he supports he supports an abortion ban across the United States with no exceptions for rape or incest. Mm-hmm. So that's how staunchly pronatalist he is. That's his view on abortion. So when he was running for Senate, he tweeted something to that effect. And so he was on Tucker Carlson to clarify what he tweeted. And this is what he had to say.
Vance.com, every little bit helps if you can throw us a couple bucks. But look, what I was basically saying is that we're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made. And so they want to make the rest of the country miserable, too. And it's just a basic fact. You look at Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, AOC, the entire future of the Democrats is controlled by people without children. And how does it make any sense that we've turned our country over to people who don't really have a direct stake in it? I just wanted to ask that question and propose that maybe if we want a healthy ruling class in this country, we should invest more, we should vote more, we should support more people who actually have kids, because those are the people who ultimately have a more direct stake in the future of this country.
Man.
I think you just caught Tucker Carlson's stupid laugh at the end there.
Man, you're just too... The bigotry and misogyny is just...
I thought I was doing a good job of it, but man, this guy. Tucker really has a way with that, doesn't he? There's just so much to unpack there, right? First of all, saying a bunch of childless cat ladies and then putting Pete Buttigieg in that list. To saying that people without children have no stake in the future.
Yeah, I think there's so much to unpack there. It's very strange to attack people for not having children. I don't think even conservative Trump supporters, there are probably people in their lives who don't have children for whatever reasons, either personal choice,
of course,
or they couldn't have children or whatever reason, right? It's a bizarre political strategy, I think, to start attacking people for having cats. It's just bizarre. And then If you think about it a bit more, Kamala Harris has children.
Yeah.
They're stepchildren. So you're attacking people for having stepchildren.
Exactly. And somehow saying that, you know, if you don't have biological children, that's, you have no stake in the future. It doesn't matter if you, like, you know, you don't care about, like, you know, you can't really care about stepchildren that much or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like,
and then Pete Buttigieg, he's got adopted children.
Exactly.
And he's gay. He's a gay man. You're calling him
a childless
cat lady. So it's just bizarre. It's like, how can I come up with a sentence that, and I've heard that, you know, Taylor Swift fans are upset at him as well because Taylor Swift doesn't have children.
Right.
And she's somewhat, you know, likes cats. So, you know, the Swift fans are after you. And once you know the Swift fans, if they're after you, well, it's basically game over for you.
That's Tennessee that's lost right there.
That's just game over. That's the world. That's the nation. That's a presidency, man. But yeah, it's just, how can I alienate as many political factions or groups of demographics of people
with one statement
and like non-traditional, like it's not like attacking like traditional racism or traditional misogyny even. It's like, let me craft a custom made, you know, misogyny.
And when this resurfaced in the past few weeks, it was also, there were also people in the Republican Party, people on Fox News who pushed back on this. Trey Gowdy, who is a noted fan of Trump, pushed back on this. And, you know, he said, I met, like, let me give you just one example of people without children who do
nuns.
Great work. Yeah, nuns.
Nuns.
He said, I met these nuns who've done such great work, service. Yeah. They don't have children. They're ostensibly a staunch part of their demographic.
It should be, if they're planning on winning.
You would think.
Yeah, so it's bizarre, and yeah, it hasn't been great for him. I think the original thinking probably for Vance was that he would be some sort of economic populist that would, you know, re-girder Donald Trump's street cred,
right,
as an economic populist.
And probably go out there and make coherent statements, right?
but I think he's face planted because the fact that he's so closely linked to Elon Musk and Peter Thiel kind of removes that economic populist veneer. And then he has mediocre levels of charisma, and he keeps saying bizarre, you know, borderline 4chan kind of level commentary on the state of the world. It's just hard to relate to for most, I think, normal functioning adults.
I think both of us saw that his attempts at making a joke about how everything is racist now. He said, you know, I had a diet Mountain Dew the other day. Pretty sure they're going to say that's racist. And like, it just falls flat because he's just not charismatic in that way, right? He's not somebody who can really pull off making statements like that. And he 100% cannot do Trump's shtick.
Yeah, he can't do it. I don't know. It's not working for him. I think he needs to rebrand again as like a technocratic liberal elitist. And like this, I think it might suit him better. I don't know. But this current, like, he's got this. It's just not working for his profile.
Hmm.
It's not. He tried the Never Trumper, didn't work. He tried the Trumper, it didn't work. He needs another rebrand. So let's see what comes next.
For sure.
For him.
Now let's actually look at one of those quote unquote childless cat ladies you were talking about there, the presumptive nominee for the Democratic ticket.
She secured the nomination, right?
Sorry. The voting was August 1st to.
Yeah.
Okay. So the nominee, the Democratic nominee for president, Kamala Harris, who had a rally in Atlanta. And, you know, she's a former prosecutor. She's running against a convicted felon.
And she's been highlighting that a lot in her rallies.
As she should. And something interesting happened recently at this Atlanta rally. Let's take a listen.
So in this campaign, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week. So the momentum in this race is shifting. And there are signs that Donald Trump is feeling it. I do hope you'll reconsider to meet me on the debate stage. Because as the saying goes, if you've got something to say, say it to my face.
What do you think? I'm curious. We didn't discuss this, but how do you feel about the crowd chanting "lock him up"?
I think there's a lot. I mean, in general, right? Like, you want the absolutely proper answer. I don't think that kind of talk has any place in political discourse. Like, you know, because if we all respect the system, if we all respect our criminal justice system, and we feel like at least to some degree it works, then we say that yeah. It's going to go through the courts. The courts are going to decide what's going to do, and they're going to hand down a sentence. There's also the other side, which says that obviously, like our opponents have degraded. You know, if you say our opponents have degraded the level of political discourse so much that now it's basically a free for all. And also, you go like, if anyone can chant, if anyone is deserving of being at the receiving end of this chant, it's Donald Trump. He's literally a convicted felon, right? He was not served time, this guy has not paid any debt back to society. So if anyone should be the receiving end of that, it should be him. And I, you know, honestly, it's
fine.
And I know it gets on his nerves.
This is the echo back to the lock her up chants.
They famously, Donald Trump chants, and he himself has said about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think it's you know, if you're saying in a kind of ironic way, like lock him up in terms of to kind of reference that lock her up, that's fine. But yeah, it's very close to saying in an ironic way to actually calling for political interference in the courts to get your political opponents.
For sure. And I do think this is ironic, right? This is clearly at a rally where your candidate is a prosecutor, she's running against a convicted felon who, and look, obviously it's not to say that people who are convicted felons can't be good people or can't contribute to society. But this one in particular is not. Like, he is very likely to reoffend.
Yeah, and I think it's quite likely if he isn't elected president, which the polls have it about 50-50 yeah. right now. But if he isn't elected president, there's so many cases against him. Some of them are very serious. You know, this immunity situation, you know, leaving that aside, it's highly likely that he will actually spend jail time because there's just so many charges against him. And some of them are, you know, the fraud cases for fraudulent electors in Georgia. There's just so many cases against him. And I think he's going to have a hard time staying out of jail if he's not elected president.
Absolutely. The other thing is also, I find it so amusing just how many like right-wing commentators are like losing their minds over chants like this. Because they're basically saying, oh, how can you say this about a political opponent? Is this where America is today? And I love that, you know, the hypocrisy, the complete lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually seen that, but to be honest, I haven't seen the right-wing meltdown on it yet, but I'm sure it exists. Speaking about right-wing meltdowns, what's happening? I know, you know, that Israel took out a lot of, you know, it took out a senior Hamas leader, the effective leader of Hamas, political leader of Hamas. The actual military leader is still in Gaza, to the best of our understanding. And they took out another leader, I believe, in Lebanon as well.
In Beirut, and Hezbollah commander.
However, there's a bit of a right-wing meltdown happening internally within Israel. Let's check in and hear what that's about.
A day of chaos started here when the police turned up at an Israeli military base to make a series of arrests. Soldiers here accused of substantial abuse of a Palestinian detainee. The base called Sde Teiman. The whole country should know. They're going to investigate me. They've taken my weapon, says this man. Sde Teiman has been used as a makeshift prison for men arrested in Gaza, with army reservists used as guards. And when 9 reservists were placed in custody, a large demonstration formed outside. Security broke down when a far-right MP breached the front gate. Part-time soldiers and protesters following behind. Some wore masks, others carried guns, and they scuffled with troops at the base. It took a police detachment several hours to re-establish control. Death to the Arabs, death to the Arabs, they shouted from the perimeter fence.
We won't let this disgrace continue. We won't let our fighters be haunted by reckless prosecutors.
When the accused were transported to a base 100 miles to the north, the protesters came with them, attempting to break into the courthouse, which forms part of the military's legal HQ. The soldiers in their way accused of being traitors. The following day, the protesters were still there. The Israeli Defense Force now deploying a sizable detachment to protect their base. The hearing is taking place right now, and the allegations are serious. It's alleged these reservists raped a Palestinian detainee and caused life-threatening injuries. A civil rights group has told Sky News the case only came to light when this detainee was transferred to a civilian hospital. And they've told us it's not an isolated case. An identical complaint, they say, is now sitting with the Israeli Prosecution Service. The arrests have triggered a storm of protest in Israel, with cabinet ministers calling for their immediate release. And in the Knesset, or parliament, an MP from the government went further. The sexual abuse of a Hamas fighter is legitimate, he said. However, human rights groups say the government has built a system where anything can happen.
We have argued since the onset of the war that the legal framework that has been designed to hold detainees from Gaza is an equivalent of enforced disappearance. It means people are unaccounted for weeks and sometimes months.
What you're saying is that it's very difficult to know what's going on in places like this.
Exactly, and I think this is the intention. When you create ex-territories, Guantanamo-like detention facilities, everything can happen unaccounted for.
The IDF has called it a distraction as they plan an operation to strike at Hezbollah. But it's also a symbol of instability in Israel and the potential for cruelty at its prisons. John Sparks, Sky News, in Beit Lid.
Yeah, it's really horrifying. There's so many reports like this that come out about abusive Palestinian prisoners, detainees in Gaza and the West Bank. Usually when you see something like this, you know, there's some reaction, then you go, okay, hopefully this will change something. It's kind of move the needle in the right way. And I think, like, we're so desensitized to it. It's like, I saw this and I went, like, so what's going to happen now? Nothing, right? There's absolutely nothing's going to change.
The government MP, a member of the government coalition, stated, as we heard in the report, that the sexual abuse of Palestinian detainees is justified.
Exactly. And yeah, he said this in the Knesset.
Yeah.
It's on their parliamentary record that he said it's completely, he made these statements, right? Which is.
So it's not like, believe your lying eyes. You know, it is, they're creating these intentional black sites to allow for all sorts of, you know, cruel and unusual punishment.
Exactly.
And it's intentional. It's all intentional. As an MP from the government stated, on the record.
Exactly.
And
it's a really awful and appalling note to end on, but that's our show. A few other things to wrap up. You can find us at The Irmán Akil on Instagram and Twitter, so check us out there.
The music you heard was by Sarah Pratt, the unbelievably talented Sarah Pratt.
The incredulously capable.
You can check out her music on SoundCloud at Leisure Noise. And yeah, we do have awesome shows lined up for you. So do continue to listen and subscribe. If you could give us a like on Spotify or iTunes, that would be great. It goes a long way. And yeah, do check out this and the rest of our podcast episodes on our podcast feeds. Hope you have a great day.